The Energy Talk.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Talk podcast. My name is Olubunmi Olajide and thank you so much for joining us again this week, because on this episode we're going to be speaking with Doseke, who is the managing director of Ulu Nigeria's operations. This is episode 5 on our series on renewables in Africa. Last year, 2020, Ulu raised $8.5 million in their Series B funding round, which was led by RP Global, Persistent Energy Capital, Gaia Impact Fund, DPI Energy Ventures, and of course, if you've been listening to the series, All On as well. And we're going to be speaking about their expansion to West Africa and what it's looking like. So in this episode, we're going to be having a very honest conversation about what it's like growing in the region and what it's like looking for talent and upscaling your workforce. And I really appreciate Doseke's honesty here when we talk about these topics especially. I've had a great time this past few weeks speaking with different founders and leaders of energy companies in Africa, and really looking forward to sharing this episode with Doseke. So let's get right into the conversation, and I hope you enjoy this one.
So I started off my career maybe like some Zen years ago as a computer programmer. I think at that time, you know, computer science was new. And in Nigeria then, I had friends that were studying computer science and had never seen a computer. So I wanted to study computer science just because I was curious about it, and I wanted to understand, you know, what role it could play in life, in business, etc. And then on the day I was signing up, I was on the line signing up for my course at school, a friend I met, she was like, "What are you studying?" I'm like, "I'm studying computer science." And she's like, "I'm doing computer science and accounting." I'm like, "Okay, that sounds interesting. Maybe I'll do computer science and accounting then." And that's how I ended up studying it. But I quickly realized I didn't want to be a techie. I liked the interaction with human beings, and I wasn't down with staring at a computer screen for like 2 days trying to break a code. And so I moved from that to strategy consulting, and I did strategy consulting for some time. And then I decided, would all the solutions I prefer as a consultant, would it work if I had the opportunity to implement them myself? And so I decided to go run a business. It was an IT company, and I wanted to try and put into practice some of the solutions that I designed as a consultant, as a strategy consultant. And it did okay for some time. And then I realized, you know, there are lots of businesses in Nigeria, lots of SMEs and lots of startups. They really don't have the support they need to actually start as a business, to even test their ideas and evolve from a business idea to a full-fledged business. They needed some kind of hand-holding, and they needed some kind of development or training for those that wanted to even raise funds. I mean, they didn't even understand what the pitch deck was. And so I decided I wanted to go into entrepreneurial consulting. And I started my own business where I was an entrepreneurial consultant. I ran my own entrepreneurial consultant firm for about 11 years, working with founders, C-suite, and board members to essentially translate some of the ideas they have into viable businesses, and or to scale the business, existing businesses, to the next level. And I found it very interesting, but I think I got to a stage I started asking myself, you know, if I was just staying within my safe zone, my comfort zone, and if I was really pushing or challenging myself. I had always been passionate about using business and enterprise to solve societal challenges and problems. And I had come up with a model that, you know, during one of some course I had attended on how I could do this. And so I think I had got to a stage where I was restless. I really wanted to try out the social impact space, because by the definition of it, it married perfectly with my ambition of using business to solve societal challenge. But I really didn't know much about the space. So when people would ask me, what do you want to do? Do you want to be an investor? Do you want to be an operator? I didn't understand the space enough. And so I decided to do a bit more research about it. And I just started spreading the word and talking to people. And again, an important lesson for anyone that wants to get into a space that they don't know, Use your network, use your connections, use the, you know, try and get in to understand the community, which is what I did. And through a mutual friend, I got to meet a lady called Olu Verayan. At that time, she was a partner at an impact capital firm or impact fund. And Olu was one of their portfolio companies. And they were looking for, they're looking to open the Nigerian market and looking for someone that could drive that. I felt this was a perfect match because it gave me the opportunity to get into the space. It gave me the opportunity to leverage on my existing skill sets of growing and scaling business while at the same time being exposed to the industry in this regard. The energy space, the renewable energy space, and the ambition to bridge the energy gap, which is what Olu has, and provide clean energy for, you know, the millions of people that are totally off-grid or that are, you know, you still, you know, using the, or they're in low grid or poor grid locations. And if you look at Nigeria, I mean, that category of people is just enormous. And so that's how I arrived at Olu.
Yeah, that's actually a very fascinating story because it really shows how you kind of followed your curiosity and it led you to this huge challenge. And I don't think there's a bigger challenge than renewable energy, especially in Africa. So, and you chose the most active sector of industry to get involved in. I'm very curious about that.
So, first of all, I have to say that, you know, there's some element of luck and fortune and the stars being aligned, you know. So I have to say that because there are people who are also interested and people who are passionate, but for one reason or the other, they are unable to. So I recognize that I'm fortunate, first of all, that I am able to pursue, you know, my ambition. I'm able to pursue my passion. There are people that are equally passionate, maybe, but they have commitments. They have responsibilities and are unable to take some of the risks that I have taken. And I think even though I wasn't aware of the renewable energy space in Nigeria, I think the fact that I was interested in the social impact space made me to be open to try and find out, you know, so where are the active spaces and how do I get involved? I think by the time when I joined Olu, that was the first time I had heard or seen anything called a solar home system. So, but, you know, there was a lot of activity going on in the space and I just didn't know that it was so active before I joined.
And I would actually like to talk about this. So how were your first few months at Olu and being thrust into the challenge at such a high level, especially at such a critical time when you're looking at expanding in a new region? So what were the first few months like?
So the first few months were tough. They were tough because I was trying to learn about this space. I was trying to learn about the business model of Olu specifically. And in as much as, you know, you plan and you have a certain time frame to run a pilot to test the model within a new country and a new geographical area, you've also raised funds and the people who have funded your business have expectations as well. So I think I started off thinking, okay, you know what? Maybe I'll take things easy. I'll take my time in trying to expand and in trying to generate, you know, steady revenue. But, you know, within a very short period of time, if you have revenue objectives, you have to ask yourself, so where am I going to get those? How am I going to meet those revenue objectives? And quickly, you know, I just started saying, okay, listen, what's the most effective way for me to be able to achieve these objectives and what is the strategy? Where do I start from? And, you know, what should be my strategy to even hire people? And one strategy that I chose, there are different ways to look at it, is because I had such aggressive targets, I chose that one of or two of my initial hires had to be experienced people in this space. Because if I didn't have an experienced person in the space, then I would just have a team of people that are learning and it would be more difficult for us to achieve our objectives. So that really helped. One of my first hires, my very first hire actually, is a gentleman called Michael Shonobi. And I think that made a difference in terms of having someone that understood the space in Nigeria, having someone that understood the challenges and could bring that to the table immediately, we could begin working on it. That we got results, the kind of results we wanted immediately. Hell no. I mean, when I look at my current run rate is probably 5 times my initial run rate when I first started. And even then I was expected. So let's assume I was doing like 10 units every week or 10 units every month from a particular territory. I was so excited that I could sell. I was like, so really we can actually sell this to people who, don't earn a lot of money, you know, and I think for me that validated the need that people do require energy access and they're willing to actually pay for it because they can see the benefit of it. It improves the quality of life, but it also enables them to earn even more money if they're able to run their business a little bit longer, if they're able to not buy petrol, to run their generators so that they can run their shops a little bit longer. They're able to run their barbing salons without buying petrol every week. So it was very interesting because you start a business doing desk research and doing market analysis, and then you enter the market and then you're like, okay, I did an academic exercise. Now let me get down to the real business because the behavior of the customer is I don't think any market research can capture it. So that's just it was very interesting, and I think we moved very quickly from a pilot phase to revenue targets and just saying, where are we going to get the revenue from? And that meant growing aggressively. We had the option of growing aggressively horizontally or growing vertically, you know, going deeper into each of those markets. And just, again, looking at the structure that I have, looking at the constraints and looking at the reality, some of the realities in terms of the turnaround time to get a new product into the market, the time it takes to manufacture and ship the product to Nigeria. 99.9% of the products are imported from outside the country. So looking at those realities, you know, I opted for a strategy that allowed me to be able to take existing products across a wider geographical spread. And that meant adopting a nationwide strategy, which is very tough because you're learning, you're building a national sales force and trying to manage, you know, 80% of your organization remotely. So that was tough, but it was also interesting.
Yes, definitely. And I just want to give some extra context here. So late last year in December, so Olu raised $8.5 million in the Series B funding led by RP Global, Allon, and a few other partners. And that was a really big deal. And that has put a lot of pressure on your position, I can assume. And yes. I just want to talk about this in the context of how quickly expansion is now possible. And you mentioned earlier about employing people, one of your first hires, experienced hires. A lot of the conversations I've had as well is how competitive it is to get the right talent for the renewable energy sector. It isn't just something that is, it's a new industry. Now companies are having to compete for talent. And I'd just like to hear about those two pieces, about the expanding in West Africa and access to talent and looking for the right people to fill the roles that are going to open as you grow.
So yes, we were able to raise additional funding to be able to expand the business. So we're exploring opening up some new markets, but we're also interested in consolidating our position in the Nigerian market. So expansion for us in Nigeria is growing to full nationwide coverage and being able to be a bit more responsive to the market in terms of ensuring there's a better product market fit. It's also looking at exploring more market segments than what we currently have, just so that we can ensure some kind of revenue assurance and not leverage on the majority of our earnings coming from only one customer segment. So a lot of the investment that we've raised goes into inventory, goes into ensuring that we can have a good stock of products and we can have better product mix in the market and be able to serve multiple customer segments on the country by country basis. We'll be doing our analysis in terms of the market opportunity there and how, you know, how we can take advantage of the opportunity there and the best way or the best kinds of products to take into those markets. So those were the plans for the funds that we've raised. A lot of work from our finance team in Dakar, working with our investors to make it happen alongside the CEO as well. So that was something that we felt was really good, an achievement for us. Again, validating our business model, validating, you know, that we're on the right track and, you know, what we're doing, you know, makes sense to investors, that they're willing to put in more money. So that was very important to us. In terms of talent, it is tough. I think when I first started, this was 3 years ago, we had some kind of unspoken agreement that we will not poach from each other. This seems like light years ago, right? But within that time, the amount of players that have come into the market has probably doubled in terms of active players that have come into the Nigerian market. It has doubled, and it's difficult to not do that. So it's something that we're looking at. And even when you find good salespeople, selling renewable energy, it's not easy, because it's not an FMCG product where it is a necessity in that sense that, you know, they need to eat, they need soap, they need, you know, household things, and it can be packaged in small quantities so that they can afford to buy it. You know, an SHF system cannot be broken down into smaller quantities so you can afford it, except maybe you offer a financing plan. So yes, it's difficult. And if you imagine, even if you just use the bell curve as a metric, you know, in a bell curve, in a population of X, right? Only about 5-10% are top performers, right? So even if you, let's even assume you want to poach, right? There aren't that many top performers out there that you can poach, number one, right? So you now have to say to yourself, what kind of development program can I have in-house that ensures that people coming into the organization are able to skill up quickly, are able to understand how we sell, what kind of structures, what kind of processes, what kind of support systems can we put in place to ensure that, you know, whoever is coming into the sales team, you know, the learning curve is reduced and they can start, you know, hitting targets and start performing, you know, within a month or two of coming on board. And so we've had to look at that in terms of not just onboarding, but in terms of development and in terms of the corresponding sales support operations to enable them get there. But it is tough. The second thing is you also have competitors that are attracting, you know, lower level employees and offering them higher level positions, right, with more money. And it's tough because you're faced with the challenge of, I know this person, for example, is not a manager level, but my competitor is offering him or her, you know, a manager level role. Do I match that or do I let him or her go? And it's very, very tough. It's very, very tough. But at the end of the day, you have to do what is best for the business. You have to do what is fair to other, to all employees within the organization. You don't want a situation where one aspect of the organization feels that, you know, they don't feel like they're part of the organization, or feel another part of the organization is being treated unfairly. So it's a constant balancing act, I would say, in terms of that. And you can only try to create the culture, and you can only try and create the kind of environment that the people who are within it have a reason to want to stay than not go. I think that's because there's only so much money you can afford to pay someone. There's only so much money you have to be able to counter an offer. But what I think is important is to give them a reason to want to stay, and to be transparent and be honest with every step of the way, to make them see a long view within the organization and see themselves within that long view of how they can progress across the organization for as long as it's possible. And in the event they choose to part ways, that you create a relationship and an open line of communication that they can still tell you they want to leave, and, you know, but still work with you to find a replacement, or work with you to groom people that can take over. I think that's the most that you can do. Other than that, you know, you if you get into a prize war, the same way if you get into a prize war, it just turns to a bloody Red Sea. So you just have to find, you know, other ways of being able to ensure you have the right talent, you're attracting the right talent, and you're retaining the right talent.
Yes, that is very interesting, because a lot of times we hear from the other side, we hear from people who are looking for opportunities, but the reality is that there are a lot of opportunities that are there, but it's just matching the right skill sets and looking for the right development plan to get the right people in and mm-hmm. to really build them up. And I'm curious about the other challenges you faced. So I know that Ulu isn't just looking at Nigeria, looking at other West African countries. Mm-hmm. So how has it been setting up that base, and are there any major challenges that are similar with in our markets, or do the consumers behave in very different ways, and how are you reacting to that?
That's a great question. When I look at Ulu and where we are, we're in majorly in Francophone countries, and Nigeria is the only Anglophone speaking country. And I think the Francophone, in terms of the culture, the language, the customer profiles, are totally different from Nigeria. Maybe if there was another Anglophone country in our portfolio, I would be able to do some kind of a comparison of Anglophone countries. But right now it's Francophone and Anglophone, and they're totally different. And it's tough, because as an organization, you have to build systems that can work in anywhere you operate within. And I think the good thing about Ulu is that we're constantly listening, and we're constantly looking at how our systems can respond to the markets that we're within. I think we're flexible enough, and we try to reduce the number of levels between anyone and a decision maker so that we can get things done faster. That is the aspiration. But we're constantly looking at what do we need to do in each country or in each geographical area that we operate within. We don't clone something in one area and replicate it in another area. We'll look at that country and that location and say, what are the changes that we need to make, and how do we ensure that we design something or implement something that works for that environment? However, you know, operating in multiple countries, what that does, it means that you're able to expand quickly, and you're able to scale up faster, because you're taking from the lessons you've learned from other countries. There are some things that don't change. So for example, if you're selling a particular type of product, that doesn't change. What may change within that country is finding the right customer segment to sell to, or understanding, you know, where is their need in that country, and what products within our portfolio are best suited for that country as a way to enter into the country and make the maximum impact that we need to. So I think that has been interesting, and it's challenging trying to make sure that there's a balance. It's challenging trying to ensure standardization, uniformity, fairness across all countries. So goal and aspiration is that if you walk into an Ulu office in Nigeria or you walk into an Ulu office in Senegal, you should get the same feel. You should get the same essence. The policies, you know, should be as much as possible within the regulatory guideline of that country be the same, so that people don't feel that they're being cheated or being treated differently. And that is a constant balancing act, because what may be fair to you may not be fair to me. But again, like I said, just having those open lines of communication, being able to get feedback from our employees constantly, and it just allows us to be aware of issues and challenges and be able to respond to them as quickly as possible.
That is very well said. And I have kind of like two questions that go similar, that go very closely together. So it's about the outlook of how you see the sector progressing. So in terms of from Ulu's perspective, what changes are you really excited about? And the second part is, a lot of young people also listen to this podcast, and you might be wondering that, okay, lots of all these opportunities that I'm hearing about, how can I make myself more competitive in the talent pool, and how can I really make myself available for these opportunities and be part of this huge push and all this change in the sector that's happening?
Okay, so I mean, again, some great questions that you have. I think at Ulu, we're optimistic about the outlook. And the reason we're optimistic about the outlook is because we haven't solved the energy gap challenge. So as long as the challenge is still there, then it means that there's still work to be done, and there are people that still need to to have solutions that will power their aspirations, whatever those aspirations are. So we do expect that there will be continued growth in the space. That's why we're in this space. I mean, and this may not necessarily be Ulu's position, but I think that increasingly we have to be saying to ourselves, beyond people at the bottom of the pyramid, beyond people that are in rural areas, you know, are there other customer segments that do have a need as well to bridge the energy gap? And how do we really ensure, what ways do we modify our business model to be able to ensure that we're meeting, we're able to reach these people at the bottom of the pyramid that we really aspire to meet? So I think we're excited because we believe that as technology changes, as the price of equipment and components continue to fall, we're hoping that we'll be in a position where we can push this further, you know, into rural areas that really need some of these solutions. In terms of young people and their talent, in terms of skilling up and being prepared, I think it's important, first of all, that you just do your own research. So if you're interested in a particular thing, if you have an idea about featuring in a particular segment, understand that segment. Understand who the players are within that segment. If you have a business idea, you know, get into communities and ecosystems that are able to vet this business idea. Work, you know, within your network and your relationships and build relationships with people. Constantly learn, spread the word. Be voracious in learning and understanding, you know, where there are opportunities within the market, where there are opportunities in Nigeria, and what you can do to take advantage of those opportunities. Where is their pain point? Where is their problem? And if you look at Nigeria, I mean, there are like 1,000,001 problems to solve, right? So you shouldn't be short of problems, right? The challenge is how are you applying those frustrations? How are you applying those challenges to say where they, you know, how can I solve the problems? So I'm talking a little bit more about the entrepreneurship track. I recognize that not everybody is cut out to be an entrepreneur, but for those that feel the need, the urge, the pull, or have been dragged into it for whatever reason, you need to be saying, okay, fine, I'm so frustrated about this. I want to do something about it. I want to solve a problem. And there's so many young people that have started businesses, fintech companies, and have raised funds in Nigeria. So I'm not talking about, you know, old, you know, people or people that you may look and say, oh, they're so advanced, or they, you know, they had generational wealth, or they had such deep connections. That's why they've gotten there. These are just people that were not happy about something. They decided to pull their resources together as young people and they started a company. Some of them have raised money. And I think to be able to channel that frustration and be able to channel that unease and channel those gaps you see and to say, how can I solve it using business? I think it's an opportunity that a lot of young people need to look at. There's so many free boot camps. There's so many opportunities now within different sectors that they offer training. They offer you to do ideation. Orlon, for example, has a business incubator specifically for the energy, for the off-grid or renewable energy space. And the other, you know, businesses that run incubators or accelerators, you know, so I think you should take advantage of that if you're there. Try your idea, vet it, talk to people, you know, spread the word to whoever cares to listen to you. Just keep on talking about it. For those who don't feel they're on the entrepreneurial track, I think you should be asking yourself, you know, what are these universal skills that when I look at the business space, when I look at the new companies that are coming up, when I look at the new industries that are emerging, these are some kind of skill sets that I see that cut across. And then begin to acquire those skills. That's the simplest way. If you acquire those skills, you even become more marketable, because with COVID, there's a lot of remote work being done now. There are consultants being employed. There are software developers being employed remotely. There are technicians being employed remotely, but you have to have the skill set and you have to do a bit more research, a bit more work to to say, you know, where are these emerging sectors or these emerging industries? What are some of the common threads that I see in terms of skill sets across these industries? What are some of the 21st century skills that I should have? What are some of the applications I need to start using? I need to know about. I remember before I started understanding about Slack, and I mean, I was like, Slack? What's that? You know, I'm like, why can't I just send an email? You know, but you have to understand what are the new technologies out there, and you know, how do I make myself more marketable? How do I position myself? And be willing to go for internships. Be willing to take on internships, even if you're experienced, because that gives you an opportunity to get into the business. Once a company takes you on as an intern, except you're so bad. Except you're so bad, right? As long as you're not, they've invested time in trying to develop you. They've invested time in trying to teach you something. It only makes logical sense for them to say, are there vacancies within the organization that this person can transition to? So you should be open to internships, be open to learning. A lot of people are, you know, when you tell them to do internships, they're like, how much are you going to pay me? And sometimes you need to look beyond that and say, what I want to learn is more important. As long as and most organizations they have a human face, they would cover your transport and maybe for your lunch and something. But you really need to look at, you know, how do I get the opportunity to learn, to put something on my CV, on my resume that shows that I have done something. And I think if you do that, and of course, you know, there's chance and there's luck and there's time, you should be able to get something.
That is really, really brilliant advice. I completely agree there. And we've spoken a lot about challenges, but I know that as challenging as the new role has been, I'm sure it's been extremely exciting. The beauty about this space is that there's always something going on. COVID has made sure of that, especially. So I just want to end off the interview by asking, you know, like, what have been the highlights of your job at Hulu so far, and what have been the moments that have left you really saying that, okay, yes, I made the right choice. I've just really, really excited you so far.
So I think the people I've met, the team. So it's impossible for me to share my success story without mentioning the team that has, you know, enabled that to happen. I think just the people that I've met, some of the people that have joined Hulu, they're hungry. They're, you know, it's, I just wonder if these people didn't have this opportunity, what would have happened to them? Because they're hungry for a challenge. They're motivated and they want to learn. They want to grow, right? So I think just even meeting these people and being able to impact their lives in one way or the other has just really been a pleasurable experience. Again, just being able to grow the business and to know that, you know, for every sale that you make, for every activity you do, you are impacting somebody's life. I think that has also been useful to us. We've also started on a couple of what I call community drives or community related kinds of projects where we partner with either NGOs or we partner with grassroots organizations and support them they're going into the markets, going into the rural areas for whatever it is that they're pushing, but also letting them know the importance of clean energy and how healthy. I think that has also been fulfilling for some of the people we've partnered with for sponsorship. They have sponsored some schools. They have sponsored some places so that they can have at least lights to read, to do their homework, educational programs to watch. Those kinds of activities have found really, really fulfilling because you see the impacts immediately when you go to those schools and you see the kids and you see the children just excited that they can watch an educational program. So that's been it for me.
Thanks for listening to the Energy Talk podcast. You can find us on all podcast listening platforms. Just search for The Energy Talk. Send us an email to @energytalkpodcast@gmail.com.